I'm here with Miss Lexi Davis. She's the author of Pretty Evil. So let's tell everyone a little bit about Pretty Evil.
Basically, Pretty Evil is about three playboys who never fall in love, and they really have their quote-unquote game intact, and they stumble upon a sexy supernatural she-devil, a woman who's not quite human, and they anger her by intruding on her territory. They actually buy a piece of investment property in Beverly Hills, but they don't realize that she's already the owner of it, and so they tick her off. And so what she does is, because of her supernatural abilities, she's able to look inside their minds and to get a feel for what they like, and also their phobias. So what she does is she morphs into each man's ideal fantasy woman in order to seduce and destroy them.
But we left out one important character who actually warns these three brothers about what they're getting into.
Right, and that would be Sunny. Sunny is the girl pal to the three bachelors, and she has a supernatural gift of her own. She's a new Christian, and she has the ability to detect evil beings. And she did, in fact, warn them, because she loves these three guys, and she warns them, but they're of the mindset that, oh, she's crazy, oh, we don't believe in all that supernatural stuff, and that doesn't exist. And so she does try to warn them in the beginning, but they do not heed her warnings, and they follow their lust. And that is exactly what the she-devil, whose name is Vix, V-I-X-X, and that's exactly what she wants, and she does it well, and she seduces them. And by the time they realize that there's trouble brewing, it's kind of, they're in knee-deep.
So, Lexi, I have to tell you, I have to be honest, I don't normally read fiction at all whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so I read the little excerpt from the book on your website when I first got contact with you. And mm-hmm. I actually laughed out loud. And my husband was like, what? And I'm like, this is funny. So I got the book. I read the book like in less than a day. And I was extremely impressed. It had me like, even though the cover of the book isn't an actual, it's more of like a silhouette of Vix. I kept finding myself turning back. I'm like, God, I'm like, okay, what does she look like? And so I really got wrapped up in the book. And I read all of the reviews, and I'm like, okay, how is she going to incorporate comedy, sensuality, and the supernatural all in one book? And I think the way you intertwined it all was, I think it was amazing. I think it's something that's different, something I had never seen before.
Well, thank you.
So how did you decide on the supernatural, the comedy, and the sexiness of the book?
It kind of just felt natural to me, Courtney. It just, I've always been kind of fascinated about the supernatural realm anyway. I've always been very conscious of the spiritual realm that exists that we cannot see, and a lot of us actually the night is there, but it does affect us. And also, I knew one thing, that when I did sit down to write a book, I knew I wanted to do something different. We have, in the last few years, we have an abundance of new fiction coming out from African-American and ethnic writers, and I knew I wanted to do something a little different, so the supernatural was just a natural progression for me. It wasn't hard to do at all, to incorporate the supernatural right alongside of contemporary things that we're all familiar with. And then the idea about having these bachelors was just, that was something, because I've often seen playboys, or players, as they're affectionately called, and they always have their way, they're so smooth, and in my mind I just was starting to wonder, now what kind of woman would it take yes, exactly, to just kind of really put it on them. I mean, what kind of woman? And I said, she'd almost have to be supernatural. So there you go. And Vix was born. Vix is my little she-devil that I'm very fond of.
I like Vix, though, but I like Vix. And I'm just thinking, I like Vix. She's, you know, there's some things she does in there. But the other thing that I found interesting was the book is set in L.A. Am I correct?
Yes.
So, and I think that was an ideal setting, because everyone has this image of California being fast-paced, beautiful women, beautiful men, well-off, slightly wealthy, extremely wealthy, famous, talented. And so that's kind of the mixture of the three men. And if I can just, can I tell the people a little bit more about the three gentlemen that are in the book and what they do
sure.
for a living? Okay, so I can't say Rice is my favorite. I like, is his name Geffen in the book?
Geffen, yes.
Geffen is the businessman, correct?
Correct.
And Rice is the author.
The author.
And Coach is...
Coach.
The athlete, yeah, the typical athlete, the macho, womanizing type. And that was one thing I felt really bad. I didn't really get in the beginning of the book because I was like, well, what did Rice do? Rice is not womanizing. I'm like, why is he going to fall prey to Vix? But you go into such detail in giving a little insight on their personalities and their dealings with women in the beginning of the book. I thought it was over the top. But then you turn it around and you build up a sense of sympathy for the characters. Into their history and their background, and I thought that was important. Did you know that going into it, that you were going to build it up where you
Definitely. I knew that the guys, they were going to have some likable features. First of all, I knew that the majority of my readers are women. That's just the way it is. So I was not going to have some just flat, one-dimensional playboys and for no rhyme or reason, you know, that just was out there just chasing women and you couldn't, you know, you had nothing in common with them. So it was very important for my bachelors to be real people, to be real men. And they have their faults, but they, each and every one of them also has that part of them that you could love or you could at least like.
Right.
And that's exactly what I wanted to come across. By the end of the book, you knew you had three real human beings.
You definitely did that. And I think with a lot of the books that are out now, like I said, I don't read a lot of fiction, but, you know, a lot of my girlfriends do in the book clubs and things like that. They build the men up and they're players with no rhyme or reason. So I thought it was great that you gave them some blood. You felt that they were human. Although they did their dirt, you know. But,
right.
And I think each one of their stories were so believable. How do you come up with the story or a background for each character?
Well, it takes some time. I take time with my characters. I spend time with them, getting to know them. And, yes, I do incorporate some characteristics from people that I have really known. But I can honestly say that I don't just take someone out of my history and write about them. So, in other words, what I'm saying is I have met people that have the qualities of a Geffen, and I also, it might sound a little strange, but I put some of myself into each character, male and female. So when I'm writing about it, I'm really feeling it also. And that could get me in trouble, because then people want to know, well, what are you like? Are you like this character? Is this you? And I say, they expect me to say, no, I'm not like any of them, but I'll say the opposite. No, they're all me. They're all parts of me, even the male characters. You know, so when I'm writing about them, the emotions, the feelings, I'm identifying with them, and I'm writing it truthfully from an emotional standpoint, if that makes any sense to you.
It does. What I find, when you're writing, do you read anything? Do you read any other novels? Do you find yourself staying away from movies just because you don't want to become influenced, or you don't have a problem
with
that?
Yes, I do. No, I do find myself concentrating on only my writing. When I'm doing my intense writing, no, I don't read novels or look at movies. Number one, I don't have the time. Number two, I'm just so invested at that point in my work. Of course, you know, when I'm not writing, I have the experience of having read many other novels and having seen movies, so that's all in me. But when I'm actually sitting down writing, no, that's not the time where I would go read another novel. I'm really into the characters at hand.
Also in your book, it sounds like you did a lot of research. I don't know if you have always lived in Los Angeles, but you did a lot of research, or if it just came from you having lived in Los Angeles.
Both. Courtney, I grew up in L.A., also in Compton, and actually the street that my main characters grew up on is the exact street that I actually did grow up on, but I had to go back and get some details and do some more research, and in the process I learned things about my own area, my own neighborhood that I didn't know when I was growing up. The answer to your question is both.
I love when I'm the same. I'm a native of Arizona, but there's things, we just had a conversation with some gentlemen who've lived here forever, and you always learn something, and then you kind of feel bad. You're like, I never knew this about my own city.
Right.
And I realized that in the book, you mentioned how Beverly Hills came to be. You spoke about the water and how the water ended up being pumped into the town and the oil and things like that. So I was really impressed with the historical factor of the novel.
I found that out doing research, and it was interesting to me. And so I said, no, let me just drop it in the novel. I didn't want to take a historical break, you know what I'm saying? So not to interrupt the flow of the story. But who better than Geffen, because Geffen is the entrepreneur. He's very smart. And who better than him to have to drop a little knowledge, you know, to have the history of Beverly Hills, because he would be that one of my three male characters. He's the one who would in research, because he wants to make money, so he's very educated. And then I just had some fun with that, because out of the three, who would least likely want to hear it would be Coach. So, you know, I had them going back and forth. And while Geffen is talking about the historical landmarks, you know, Coach is like, well, just where's the fat burger? Because I'm hungry. That's all. You know, if you want to impress me, tell me where the fat burger is, not where the land and the wells were built and all that stuff. So just had some fun there. But, yeah, I did drop in something that I had learned by doing research.
They were believable. Mm-hmm. But Coach, I have to say, got on my nerves more so than anyone. But the further I got into the book, I realized Coach is the one that's had more emotional baggage and things going on.
Right. That's a good point that you bring up, Courtney, because Coach, I liked him because he was the type that would just say whatever was on his mind, and he did not care what it would cause, what trouble it would cause. But that's true. I knew that Coach was going to come across as somewhat, you know, a bit brute. So I said to myself, no, but why would he, how did he get that way? And so that's where JD came in, his father. And so when you saw who he was raised by, you know, the dysfunction there from his own father, whom he had tried to please like most of us children do. We want to please our parents, and sometimes our parents are defective. But anyway, I really liked to show where Coach came from, because if you say, oh, he says some chauvinistic things, but look at where he came from. And then when you see what kind of father raised him, you might think, well, he couldn't help but be somewhat like that. But then, of course, and without giving away the ending, you know, he had to kind of make a decision against his own father at the end.
Funny you should mention the ending. I have a horrible habit of, if a book is good, I always, even if it's not good, I'll read the first couple of chapters, and then I always have to read the last paragraph of every book. So, of course, I did this with your book. But then, halfway through the book, the suspense started to build, and I had to read the last chapter, the whole last chapter. I was like, okay, now I can read the book without stress, wondering.
Oh, so you knew the ending before you finished?
I did.
Oh.
The book was so good, though. It didn't interfere with it. That's how good the book was. It drew my interest to not even read the last chapter, but, I mean, not read the last paragraph, but to read the last chapter. Then I went back and had to read the rest of the book, because then, of course, I want to know what happened in the middle and how they got to that point and how they got rid of Vix, whom I love. What I want to know is the three men, the male characters in the book, did you go into writing the book knowing that you were going to bring Sunshine in, or was that something that developed as you were writing?
Oh, no, she was there from the beginning. Oh, definitely, yeah. No, I definitely had all five of my characters. I had the three bachelors, their girlfriend, Sunny, and Vix. They were there from the beginning, because that is the story. She was going to be the link between them, and Sunshine or Sunny was going to be juxtaposed to Vix, good girl, bad girl type of thing. But also, I was not going to make either one of them one dimensional either, because you keep mentioning that you like Vix, and I get that a lot. I get a lot of fan mail saying, I like Vix. Well, Vix is a she devil, and people who haven't read the book are thinking, how could you like the bad girl? But it was because I made a conscious decision to not make her all bad, to put some humor in there, some human qualities.
You realize why she's in the state that she's in now. So
right.
That was great, but I think the dialogue is what got me. And so when as I'm reading the book and I'm getting into the dialogue and I'm just cracking up, there's some of the things that she said in the book, and I have a couple of quotes here, but I don't know if I should share it with everybody else. But and I was like, this so needs to be a movie. This is a movie. So is that in the works? Has that been something you thought about? How did you come up with the dialogue? Did you write the dialogue in today's language thinking that it would transform over a little easier?
Well, I studied screenwriting actually before I became a novelist, and I got my a certificate in screenwriting at UCLA as well as a degree in English, and I have always wrote very visually. I've always written very visually, I should say. So yes, the dialogue, I play it out in my head. I see it as a movie, and I get that so much in my reviews or people approaching me saying, this needs to be a movie, or this needs to be on cable. I even had one reviewer say it has all the makings of a television sitcom. Well, I don't know about television because it gets a little racy, but yeah, to answer your question, it's pretty evil. Will end up on the screen one day, I'm sure of it. Awesome. I've already been approached by a TV producer, and he's reading the book right now. And it's just a matter of time.
Sunshine's her surrogate mother, I guess, would that be a good word?
Yeah, you could call her a surrogate mother, right. She's sort of her mentor. Mother Roby is a figure there for Sunshine, yes.
What made you bring her character into the book?
That's a good question. She's, you know, without her, Sunny has no one that understands what she's going through at the beginning, you know. So she needed, a lot of times in fiction, you know, the hero will journey out and he'll have someone like a helpmate, just someone whom understands what they're going through. And that's what Mother Roby's function was. To be kind of a guide, an assistant, but yet she's only there really for Sunny emotional guidance and spiritual guidance.
And I like the fact that she's non-judgmental of Sunny and
right.
the things that Sunny has done. And neither is she judgmental of the guys that she, all of Sunny's friends, when they finally get them into church and
right,
like that,
exactly.
and some of the things that they're experiencing. So I think that even makes it even more real, because we all have that mother figure or someone who's there to guide us through difficult times and things like that, the strengths that we have inside of us.
Right.
So I love
right.
Anne.
Thank you.
The thing, and I have to mention to everyone, my favorite line in the whole book is where Vic says, they put me on hold. At that point, I was like, okay, I'm done. I have to see this on the big screen.
I know. That's just part of my craziness coming out, Courtney. I mean, I was just writing that scene. I was just getting into it, and I could see what she was doing, the little thing, the ritual. And I'm the type of person that, you know, I started out trying to write horror, and it just didn't work because I would crack out. Instead of getting scared at the point where you would go into the real scary stuff, I just wanted to say something crazy, you know, and just laugh, kind of like to release the tension. So that's where that came from. I said, let me just supernatural demoness is actually doing something like a stance. And I'm thinking, no, it'll be the craziest thing that can happen. I'm like, they're just going to put her on hold. And that's what I can't explain it any more than that. It's just the way I think. Even when I'm watching a scary movie, I'm thinking the funny part. What's the funny in this is what I'm thinking, you know, because I don't really like to go there, so to speak, like with the real serious Stephen King or the Exorcist stuff. It's like, no, I'm looking for a comedic outlet. So that's where that came from.
Do you think you'll ever do all comedy or write any comedy screenplay or television series or anything like that? Because I think you did that so well in the book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, I'll do anything. I'll do anything to get out there and to just, I just want to work. I just want to write. You know, I can write anything.
Have you always been a writer?
Yeah, I have always been a writer. I can honestly say that from a child. I was quiet in school, and I could come home, and I could write the most outrageous things, and you would never think that this little quiet girl is the one who thought of it. I've always been a writer.
Now, were you the one that was sitting back watching everyone and wrote absolutely everything that you saw and
I was an observer. My close friends knew I was crazy, but everyone else just thought I was quiet. And I was observing things the whole time. And, yeah, but my family and friends, they always knew that I was just something a little off about me.
Did you share with others your writings, or did you keep it to yourself? Or
I did. I shared it with my closest friends, and they had a ball. I remember being in high school, and I made up a soap opera of the other students, the popular ones and the unpopular ones, and I had them doing crazy things, and I would write a little bit like every 2 or 3 days, and when I get to school, I'd pass them during boring like history class or science class. I would pass around my papers, and my closest friends couldn't wait to see what was happening in the next episode. And no one had any idea that I was doing that except the people closest to me. So yeah, I had a fun time doing that in high school.
I can see now how that comes out in your book. Do you have any of your old writings? Did you keep most of the stuff that you wrote when you were younger?
I kept some of them. My mother kind of kept all of them, too, and I'll come across some of them every 2 or 3 years, like if she's cleaning out a drawer, and she's like, here, this is something you wrote, and I would read it, and I would just say, what was wrong with me? And it was crazy from the beginning, but I had a lot of fun doing it. I mean, some of that stuff I wouldn't want to get out now. But yeah, I do. I have some of my writings, and I was the one who, in English class, it was when it came time to write a creative essay, I had no problems at all. And so my English teachers at an early age started encouraging me and saying, "You need to pursue. You have a talent for writing and being creative." And I would say, "Okay, you know." And then time to graduate and go to school, they were like, "You need to major in English." And I was like, "Oh, okay," you know. And I just kept with it. And every time I've written something, people have said, "You have a really good imagination. You need to do this." And I'd be like, "Okay." And then as an adult, I got sidetracked after I graduated, and I tried to do other things. I was a guessing. I was an entrepreneur. I started so many businesses, I can't even name them all, and I was very much into making money. And I was doing very well. And then I hit a roadblock, and I actually wasn't able to work anymore due to physical health issues. And there was only one thing that I could do while I was sitting up there in bed, and that was write. And so that's how I met my destiny, and I believe it was God ordained. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got into writing.
During all of your entrepreneurial exploits, did you continue to write, or did you put it on hold?
I put it on hold. I always said, like when I was out there doing things and doing them well, I always said, when I get time, I'm going to write. Or, okay, let me just make a little bit more, and let me just do this, and then I'll write. And then I'll write.
No, you're such a great creative writer. And I wonder, though, during that time, did you feel an emptiness in your heart? Did you feel a void, like you weren't doing what you were supposed to be doing? Because I think all too often we don't follow our heart and don't follow what we know in our soul, what we're supposed to be doing for financial reasons or social reasons. Did you find that?
Right, exactly. Exactly that. Exactly what you said. I felt a void. I always felt a void. I even felt guilty in a certain sense because I knew I was not doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing. I felt, and then when I did start back to writing, I felt complete. I felt like this is what I should have been doing all along. Sometimes we're a little scared to follow our dream. Sometimes we don't know, you know, we procrastinate. But it's always there, and I think until you really do that one thing that you believe that you were put on this earth to do, I don't think you're going to be fully complete or that satisfaction that you just can't describe. It's not going to be there until you go ahead and do it.
If you don't follow your goal, you won't be successful. And when I say successful, I don't mean financially, but you won't live a full life. You won't be able to give back your heart to the people
Right. You
love. You won't be able to give back to the community.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to be after something else. Did you struggle when you weren't able to continue to be a business owner and self-employed? Did you have some struggle there? Did you beat yourself up and do the why me, kind of like sunshine, why me type of thing? Or were you just like, did you take it as a blessing, opportunity?
I did. I took it as a blessing. I faced some really dark times, and I can honestly say I have my problems or my shortcomings, but one of them was not. I never did the why me because the rhetorical question is, why not you? So I never spent time doing that. I was too busy looking for the lesson. What does this mean? What does this, well, how can I go from here? What's the blessing in this? It was a really bad time in one way, but that's when I really drew a lot on my faith in God. That who, you know, and I believe that he was still in control. Sometimes it looks like things are just out of control or things don't go the way we thought they were going to go, but he's still in control, and I just fell back on that, and I couldn't have landed in better hands than that, because now here I was going to have to, I'm going to do what I always wanted to do. It's just that I was too busy trying to make money thinking, oh, well, you know, I need to buy this or I need to make, have so much in the bank, and I wasn't doing my first love. And then the circumstances came to where physically I could no longer, I mean, I physically, you know, the doctor said, no, you can no longer work. And that was hard to hear because I had been working since I was 14 years old. I always had that very independent spirit in me. I always wanted my own money. So it was, yeah, it was a good thing that came out of a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no regrets. I only wish I had started doing it earlier. But even when I say that, I remind myself that sometimes you have to grow a little bit. Sometimes, you know, the timing is not right. You know, so maybe if I had started writing at a younger age, my writing wouldn't have been fully evolved yet. So now I feel like everything is happening the way it's supposed to.
When you write, do you share your writing with anyone as you go, or did you just kind of keep it to yourself? And
I tend to keep it to myself, especially in the early stages, because writing is sort of, I've heard some people make the analogy, it's almost like an embryo, you know, like giving birth. When it's very, very young, you don't want the criticism. It's not ready yet. You know, so I tend to be very guarded of my initial ideas, and let me develop it, let me spend time, let me see what it is before I share it with anybody. So yes, I do tend to keep things to myself. Even with my second book that's being edited now, I won't go into the details of it. I just will say that it is another, it's along the same lines of Pretty Evil. It's funny, paranormal. It goes, it's definitely out of the box. It's not what you expect. But I'm still editing it. So, you know, like, let me get it straight, and then I'm going to surprise you, and then you'll see what it's about, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, you surprised me on this one. So, Lexi, I got a little mad at you on this book because I had to jump through some pages here because I'm a very impatient person.
Uh-oh.
And so there's a part in there with Sunshine and Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been the best dramatic climax that I've ever read in a book. I had no idea where you were going with that one when she was waiting for her little surprise.
Oh.
So, and I'm curious, did you... We all expect the same thing, that there was just the typical surprise. Did you at some point shift that and say, no, I'm going to put another twist in here? Or how did you work that part out? Do you know the part I'm talking about?
With Marvin?
Yes, with Marvin.
Oh.
She goes to his house after Rice comes in and barges into her house wrecking up her name.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. That's an interesting question. I always knew that that was not going to work out because it wasn't, that's not who she was meant to be with. So I just...
Well, we all knew it wasn't going to work out, but we just didn't know it was going to end the way it did. And so I was really impressed with that. I was like, I think you flipped it a couple of times. I was like, okay,
yep.
So it's not going to be this. Oh, okay, so she's going to get there. Okay, it's going to be this. And then
sobbing,
crying, and whatever. I'm just like, what is she doing to me?
Yeah, that's it, Courtney. You know, I said on my website, my greatest fear as a writer is to bore a reader. I will not bore you. So I have to keep flipping it. Because if it's just run-of-the-mill, it's like, oh, I expected that. No, I can't have that. So, yes, I will continue to flip the script as often as possible. When you think you know, you don't know.
My mouth literally fell open. I was like, what? But I like the fact that you left it alone at that point. When that was it, it was it.
That's it.
It was it. And I was just like, oh, gosh, she's going to pop back up in this book somewhere. And but you didn't. And I can say that I'm glad that it was over and done with. You know, we all have our little struggles. And
mm-hmm.
You know, we either pack our girlfriends in the car or we move on.
Right, exactly.
What do you do when you hit, do you ever get writer's block?
Writer's block. No, I have so many ideas going through my head. I never get writer's block. My problem is more too many ideas, too many stories. Pretty Evil was actually probably another 100 pages long.
Okay,
and we had to cut it down because, I mean, I have too many ideas. Like Vic, for instance, had a lot more background. A lot more of her background was in the original manuscript of Pretty Evil. We went down to the underground spa with her, and we went through boot camp, which was called something else in the book.
Oh, she went to go get her pointers on how to get them out of the house.
Yes,
okay.
That was a whole couple of chapters of what happened down there when they taught her the fine lessons of seduction, how you seduce human men. And I went into all details of that and described the place and everything. And I had a lot of fun with that. And even the editor said it was very entertaining, but the book was just too long, so we had to cut some out.
Well,
we could use
some pointers on how to be more seductive, so maybe you can put that in like Cliff Notes or something.
Yeah. It'll probably turn up in the sequel. Vix is back.
Okay, Vix's lessons.
Yeah.
101 ways how to Vix a man.
Exactly. It's funny you should even bring it up because at the signing just now there were like three college girls came up to me, and when I started telling them what the book was about, this one asked, well, do you think that she could give us some pointers on how to deal with our boyfriend? And I just start cracking up laughing. I'm like, first of all, you know, this woman is serious. This is not even a real woman. This is a demoness. But, yeah, you might pick up some pointers, but don't hold me responsible.
Oh, yeah. It would be fun to play with on a couple of nights a week.
Right, exactly. And that's where the fun came in. That was in the initial conceptualization of the novel. I said, I'm going to have some fun because I'm going to be able to really put it on these guys in a way that they haven't had a real woman do before. So, yeah, that's how I had some fun with Vic. And she got in there, boy. She figured them out. Figured out what they liked, and she gave it to them.
Oh, she gave it to them. Because that's what I say. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you detach yourself emotionally? Because I'm not, I tell everyone, and you'll hear this in my other interviews, that I'm not an artist. So my husband's a painter, an artist, and things like that. And when clients and things or editors, publicists tell you that you need to cut something out, I get emotional. I'm just like, no, but this is important. So how do you come down to, let's say, taking that section out of the book?
Well, I understood the business. I understood the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, hey, when the publishers need a manuscript only so long, and I understand that because the business side kicks in and you want to sell, right? And your chances, you know how some people will go to a bookstore and they'll look at a book, and the second thing they might look at is how long is it? And if it's too long, if it's too thick, they will put it back.
Right.
Some people do that. So I understood that. And I also understood that, hey, just because I had to take it out, it was kind of heartbreaking, but I could do another book, a sequel, or, you know, I could use that material somewhere else. It's just that for this story, and also pacing is very important. And you understand that you and your editor are working for a common goal. You just want it to be the best book possible. So if she's suggesting that you cut something, if you understand why and you agree with it, it's easier. Now, what gets hard is when you put something out there and people just attack it for no reason.
Mm-mm.
Now, that gets hard, and you just have to develop thick skin. You have to understand that there's just going to be people out there that's just going to want to hate on you for no reason.
Do you address those people, or do you just not let them affect you because it's going to affect your writing and your personality and outlook overall?
Yeah, I just ignore it. And I know that's, like, easy to say. It upsets you for a minute, but I think I'm getting better at it. With Pretty Evil, the reception has been so great. 99 comments that are so positive. Why in the world would I pay attention to the one that says, oh, well, you know, I don't like it for blah, blah, blah. So I just go back to the positive. You know, and I just let that, whatever.
Well, Lexi, knowing that this is your first novel, I think you have developed pretty thick skin. How did you develop the thick skin necessary to keep going?
Yeah, probably just life. You know, you live a little bit and you learn that you're going to have to be in control of your own emotions, and you cannot put your feelings. You can, you just cannot, you know, have your feelings dependent on what somebody else says or does or think. And that's just life. Even in my business experience, you know, sometimes a deal would fall through and you get upset or whatever, but you got to go on, you know, to the next deal. When I was younger, I was probably a lot more sensitive, and then as I grew older and matured, I realized, hey, you know, we're all basically just trying to make it. And so the people who are out there trying to act like they've got so much over you, they really don't. They're just as insecure, or they have their own insecurities, and a lot of times they project their insecurity onto you. So, yeah, as I hit my mature years, I just realized that I'm not going to let people affect me that way, because life, you will have a hard life if you do. And then as an author or artist, as you mentioned, yes, if you're putting yourself out there, you're putting your creativity out there, and you just need to understand. In fact, some author friends told me before I was published, they said, look, this is going to happen. They said, some people are just going to attack you for no rhyme and reason. And so by them telling me that, and I listened very closely and I believed them, so when it did happen just a few times, I was like, oh, well, hey, that just means I'm doing something.
It's great that you have that support. Now, of course, okay, so everyone wants to know. So you have, like, that amazing story. You're running your business. Something happens. You now have to write a book. And did you have a deal before you wrote the book?
No, I didn't.
Tell us what happened.
Well, I could not work anymore, so I started writing. I started putting all my faith together. I mean, this is what, you know, it's easy to talk about, oh, yeah, I have faith, but then when something hard comes and you start running and screaming, it's like, no, okay, here's where the rubber meets the road. So I just started writing, Courtney. I just started writing, and I started believing that, you know, everything was going to work out, and I just wrote. And then I guess it took another 2 or 3 years while I was still sick. I kept writing, and I sent out my work to some people, and I started networking and reaching out to other authors, and I got a hold of an agent who agreed to read my work, and she read it, and she decided to take me on as a client. Then it was another 2 years. She sent out my manuscript, and then one day we got a call from Simon & Schuster, who absolutely loved the story.
Okay, what was that call like? Where were you? I know you remember.
Where was I when I got the call?
Yes.
You know, this is going to sound strange, but I had been working with my agent for a couple of years, and I was sort of like, I didn't want to bother her, and I was kind of very, just I just didn't talk to her very much because I figured she'd call me. And something started welling up in my soul, like, you know what, I've been praying about this. It's time for this to happen. So I called her, and I kept her on the phone for about a half an hour, and I was just telling her, essentially, I'm ready to get published. Just what do you need from me? I'm ready to get published. I mean, I knew that my manuscript was out there, but I just told her, it's time. And she was like, really? I mean, the very next day, she called me back. She says, you're not going to believe this. She says, Simon & Schuster is interested in buying your manuscript. And then she was probably a little shocked that my response was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I was expecting that. because I was just so ready, and I was just so praying for it, and I just knew it was going to happen. And, you know, so, and that's exactly how it happened. I just felt it in my spirit. So when I got the call, of course I was happy. I was elated, but I was almost expecting it, as weird as it would sound. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where that faith, that comfort comes in,
right.
And that's the way it happened. So she told me that Simon & Schuster was interested, and so then a few days later I got an actual call from them, and we just went from there. And it was a lot of rewriting involved, a lot of work, which I already was mentally prepared for it.
Oh, okay.
And I would tell anybody who's thinking about writing a book, if you think it's easy, it's not. But do it because you love to do it. And that will carry you through all the rewrites.
So to do it for fame and fortune is the wrong reason.
I would say so. Those few deals you hear about every once in a while, some author gets $50 million for their first book. You know, lightning does strike.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of us, it's a lot of work. And you do not get rich quick. You don't, not in this business, not with all the competition that you have around you.
Do you still participate, or have you ever participated, and this is for all the authors out there, in writing groups?
Well, just before I got the contract, I was the moderator at a African-American Authors Book Club at Barnes & Noble, and I did that for a couple of years, and I loved it because it was a gathering of women, mostly women. We had some men, too, like-minded women who loved to read. We're professionals or housewives. Some are educated, and we came together on a common love of books, and I really cherished that because it kept me very in tune with what readers were thinking, but I was writing at the time, too. Then after I got my contract, I was just so busy with deadlines that I had to let that go, but I still go back and visit them every chance I get. I'm not in a writing group. The reason why is because when I write, my writing now goes straight to the editor at Simon & Schuster, and that's enough.
Wow.
I mean, and actually, you know, there it goes through several editors before it's published, so I have enough feedback on that level.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, no, I'm not in a writing group, but I do like to keep contact with the book club members that I had gotten to know. And I love to get email from people. And if people email me, I no matter how busy I am, it might take a few days, but I always email people back. I love to get the little email that says, hey, I just read this book. I was so surprised I wasn't expecting. I get that a lot. People say, I was not expecting this. And I'm so curious. I'll write them back and say, well, what were you expecting? Just to get their comments, you know, but they just say, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was not expecting this kind of story. So I do keep in touch with readers a lot. I love that interaction because writing can be so solitary.
Well, I think people say they don't know what they were expecting because what you're doing is not the norm. You know, Octavia Butler passed away last week, and she was the first black woman that ever really delved into science fiction.
Right.
And so I think it's just the not knowing what to expect.
Right.
And how you get so wrapped up in just the typical, the everyday, the norm, anything that's pushed in front of you, you just forget that people can actually go outside of everything else that's out there.
Right, and that's exactly what I wanted to do. When the manuscript landed on the editor's desk at Simon & Schuster, she asked me, what is it? Is it comedy? Is it horror? Is it paranormal? Is it romance? Is it sci-fi? And, you know, what is it? And I said, yes, all of that. But, you know, there was some pressure at the beginning to put me in one particular genre. And recently I had dinner with my editor, and she mentioned that it seems like I've something to the effect that I've kind of started something a little different on my own. And, you know, there couldn't have been a better compliment as far as I was concerned because that's what I wanted in the first place.
Well,
something a little different. Something just a little different because, you know,
different.
You need to stand out.
But, Lexi, isn't it nice to know that you may be the Octavia Butler of our generation or the next up-and-coming, you know, African-American woman who has broken some grounds?
Yes, I that's great because, you know, I'd much rather be an innovator than an imitator. So, yeah, I mean, that would be exactly what I would have hoped for. That would be great. I just hope that I could live up to that, to bring something a little different to the table.
I think you will. So now you're going to start getting all type of phone calls and can you come and speak at our school and our creative writing groups? And
hey, I'm getting a lot of attention based on the uniqueness of the story, and I absolutely love it. And I try to do, whenever I'm invited somewhere, I try to be there because I definitely am not the type that wants to just write and then be standoffish. I love getting out and interacting with people. So when I'm invited, I try to be as many places as I can.
And what is the best way for any listeners out there who would like to invite you to their organization?
Go to my website, www.lexidavis.com. There's all kind of ways to email me directly from my website. But just kind of look around and see, you know, read my bio, kind of see where I'm coming from so you'll know. And hopefully, you know, read the book. And then just drop me an email and as my schedule permits, you know, I will try to accommodate as many requests as possible. I am going to be in Atlanta coming up in August at the National Book Club Conference. I'll be a panelist on that. The Romantic Times has a convention coming up in May also that I'm on a panelist. So I'm not doing a lot of touring for my first book. What I would like to do, Courtney, is first build up an audience before I actually, you know, pack that suitcase and jump on the plane to go out places. So that's, so I do a lot of internet advertising and internet outreach, you know, because, you know, the internet just kind of brings the whole world in, right there into your, you know, your computer. Do a lot of stuff on the internet, but I've done phone chats with book clubs, you know, and texts and all over the place. So I'll call in and do a conference call, you know, to any book club that selects the book. I make myself very accessible, at least I try to.
Anyone out there who is, I always say this, who is looking to promote anything that you're doing, you have to be confident enough to get out there. You have to stop listening to the negativity for people telling you you can't do it or, you know, no one else is doing it. What makes you think that you can do it?
Right.
And just have to keep pushing forward.
Right. That's very true.
And now tell us about your nominations for your book awards.
Oh, well, I was surprised. I was nominated by the Romantic Times Book Club for Best New Fiction in the African American category, and that took me by surprise, being that I'm just now getting out there, that they would like it so much. I guess they do a what do they call it, a Reviewer's Choice Award. So I made it in that, and I'm really excited about that one.
Well, see, that's proof. Proof was in the pudding that you're out there. People are hearing about you.
Right.
And the internet is such a great thing, though, isn't it?
It's it is.
The word.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, wow, what did we do before the internet? We wrote letters, we licked stamps. Wow, how archaic was that? I love it. Yeah, this is something new with you. I'm like excited about, I think, what's a podcast? I'm like, okay, I'll try it.
And you know, I have to be honest, this only stemmed from the fact that I was doing interviews and I was doing interviews and I hate writing. I'm not going to lie. I'm not the best writer. It's something that I never thought about or interests me. And then the other part is that you'll have a phone conversation and you'll talk to someone and you're trying to interview them. Then you'll find yourself writing it down. And so that's one translation. And then you find yourself typing it again. Uh-huh. That's another translation. And just the personality of so many people I speak to is just fabulous. And it doesn't come across. I'm not that flowery type of writer where I can draw out someone's personality and put it onto paper or put it onto the computer screen. So I had to do what worked for me.
And this worked.
This is it. So tell people, how can they get your book?
My book is available online at Amazon.com. It's available on my website. That would probably be your best bet, is just to go to LexiDavis.com, because if you click on purchase the book, I have all of the outlets right there. You could purchase it from Amazon, BarnesandNobles.com. It's even at Walmart.com on the internet, or you can order a personally autographed copy directly from me, and I will ship it, you know, to you and sign it personally to you. As far as brick and mortar places, it's available at your neighborhood Walden Books, Borders, Barnes and Nobles. Pretty much anywhere. It's at some Walmart. It was at Sam's Club. So it should be available where you're at. And, of course, I'm laughing because I told you this, and then you weren't able to find it in your neighborhood. But,
no, they had it, and they were aware of it. But they, my first stop was Borders, I believe it was, inside the mall. They knew of the book. They heard of the book. But it was out of print.
Out of print.
Oh, Lexi's doing her thing. And she was just like, well, they're doing a second run. I don't know how the term is, but they were doing the print of it.
Yeah, it went back to print because they sold out the first copy,
And tell everyone, when was the book released? This is amazing to me.
Yeah, it was released in October of 2005.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, so let me look some more. And I couldn't find it, but I want to drive everyone and invite everyone to go to your site, LexiDavis.com, because you did send me a personalized autographed copy. It got here in record time.
Yeah.
So I feel a little special. So when Lexi's doing her movie and, you know, she has like Oprah playing as a starring role or somebody, you're like, I have her autographed books. Who's your favorite fiction writer?
I love Tanana Reeve Due, L.A. Banks, Mary Monroe. I just love Tina McElroy Ansa. She's the ones that are kind of, I like Lolita Fowles, the author of Child of God. I just like the ones that just kind of give you a little something different, you know.
Are you reading anything now? Do you have time to read anything now?
I have not had any time to read, but as you said that, I swerved in my chair and I looked at the stack of books on my desk. There are so many, I can't even start. I have so many books that I have bought and I want to read, but I have not been able to. Maybe after I finish the edits on the second book, then I'll be able to get back to reading. But I love to read all kinds of different people.
Do you read from start to finish, or do you pick up and bring other books in as you read?
No, I like to read from start to finish, and I do not go to the back of the book. I do not read the ending because I want to be surprised.
Hey, that just goes along with my personality.
Another lady told me the exact same thing.
Really? I'm not crazy.
I told her, I said, if you do that to my book, I will haunt you.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
I didn't know. I didn't know to tell you
that. I'm glad I didn't tell you.
She said she will read the ending just to see how everything's going to work out. And I'm thinking, why would you do that? That's the fun, because you don't know. And then I'm surprised that you told me that even after you read the ending, you were still curious. I'm thinking, well, how it was going to end.
I'm one of those people, it's like, okay, what happened in the movie? Tell me. They're like, no, I won't tell you because you won't go see it. Yes, I will. Tell me what happened. I don't read the whole ending. It depends on how good I read the last paragraph.
Uh-huh.
Then I'll go back to where I left off. And then if it gets really good and I can't take it and the anxiety and all of that builds up, then I have to read the whole last chapter.
That's amazing.
And so that's what
I've never heard. It just seemed like you would just be spoiling it. But hey, if it works for you, I'm just glad it worked for you. Because I would just think you would say, well, I know how it's going to end. What's the point? And close the book and throw it away. You know, but hey, if it works for you. I'm glad it worked for you.
I'm one of those people that don't like surprises either. Don't tell me you bought me something. Just give it to me or don't tell me at all.
Well, what about in a movie? When you go to a suspenseful movie, what do you do?
I'll read the review.
For some spoilers, huh?
Okay. Yeah, the ones that say, if you don't want to be you're in the movie to be spoiled, don't read any further. It's like, okay, give it to me.
Oh, okay.
I need to know what it is.
That's amazing. No surprises for you. Okay.
Oh, none at all. So whoever that was, tell her to give me a call so she understands.
Yeah, she sure did. Yeah, I'm sure there are more than just two of you out there that does that too. So.
Well, hopefully we'll hear from all of them.
And you know, maybe I'll put a fake ending in my next book to throw you guys off. Say, ha-ha.
Oh, please don't do that. I told you how upset I got with you when I found out I couldn't. Marvin and Sunshine were just driving me crazy. So I was flipping back and forth and just like, okay, come on, Lexi, you're killing me here. I didn't have an option to jump to the back. I had to figure out if it was on the next page or two pages over. But it's a great book. Everyone, please go check it out. You will be impressed and surprised. You're going to laugh and you're going to have some favorite characters in there. You're going to have characters that you can identify with. There's a lot of spirituality in the book also.
Yes.
So it's something in the book for everyone. Thank you so much for spending time with us today and just giving us a little insight to you and your writing style and what to expect in the near future.
Well, it's my pleasure.
And please continue to keep the website updated and get us all involved because I want to be the first out there to get your next book so I can read that last paragraph.
Oh, let me think. I think I'm going to tape it. I'm going to tape the last paragraph, the last pages together.
But I don't ever share it for anyone. I won't spill it, so I won't tell anyone. Okay, yeah. So I won't tell anyone unless you call me and ask me what happens in the end.
I know what I'll do. I'll just actually tear the last chapter out and send you the book.
Okay.
Then you'll have to come back to me.
As long as you autograph it. Thank you so much. And everyone, go and check out Lexi's website and learn a little bit more and go and pick up the book. It is a great read. Email her. Let her know what you think about the book.
Yes. Love to get email.
Is there anything? Are you coming to Arizona?
You know, for my second book, I'm going to do more touring, so I will definitely put Arizona on the list. But I'll have two books out by that time.
Okay.
So hopefully I will, you know, have built up some good word of mouth and some good readership so that when I do go, you know, there'll be more than just me there at the signing. So Yeah.
You won't, I promise. We welcome you. You're more than invited to come out, even with one book.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely get in touch with you. And if I'm anywhere near Arizona, I would love. In fact, I'm really looking forward to that, to getting out more and to meeting the people in book clubs. And yeah, that's all coming down the pipeline.
I know it will, and I know that you'll be so successful.
Well, thank you.
And don't forget all of us when you get on the big screen.
I won't.
We'll be waiting for our names in the credits.
Oh, definitely. Oh, I'll definitely do that. And thanks so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun, this interview.
Thank you, Lexi, and you have a good evening.